The School of Management.
Hello, Juno. Welcome to the April 15th edition of Juno Afternoon. It's a sad afternoon. There's been an explosion in Boston at the end of Boston Marathon. We'll be going to NPR for a news update. Today we have in the studio CBJ manager Kim Kiefer. We'll be talking about STEM science camps. Judith Morley will be here to talk about the upcoming quilt show. And we'll talk with the Juno girls about their upcoming May 4th bout.
BBC News with Jonathan Izard.
Twin bomb blasts just seconds apart at the finish line of today's Boston Marathon that sent spectators fleeing in panic. As of yet, no suspects are in custody. Authorities are not saying who they think may have been behind the explosions. Boston area hospitals, meanwhile, are reporting two people dead, up to 87 others injured as a result of the explosions.
The number of victims injured in the blasts is still growing. In the meantime, authorities are asking people to stay away from the area where the explosions occurred. Governor Deval Patrick says Massachusetts State Police have closed off a 15-block area around the marathon finish line.
That is a crime scene right now, and it's very, very important to helping people do their job, law enforcement do their job, that people stay out of that area.
There are 1,500 members of the National Guard in the city, and there's increased security at hotels around Boston. Emergency officials are setting up a drop-in center for people who were separated from family members, and police are asking for tips from anyone who might have information about the blast. For NPR News, I'm Shannon Mullen in Boston.
President Obama held a brief press conference at the White House in the wake of the Boston bombings. The president saying whoever is responsible for what happened will be held accountable.
We still do not know who did this or why. And people shouldn't jump to conclusions before we have all the facts. But make no mistake, we will get to the bottom of this.
The president says he has briefed FBI Director Robert Mueller and Homeland Security Director Janet Napolitano and said appropriate resources are being mobilized. The president has directed the federal government to increase security as needed. The president made his comments about 3 hours after the explosions. Some portions of a tough new gun law are taking effect in New York State today. The measures include a provision that would require owners of firearms now classified as assault weapons to register their guns. There are also limits on the number of bullets allowed in magazines. New York affiliate of the National Rifle Association was seeking to halt portions of the law. New York's tough new gun laws are the first in the nation passed following last December's shooting at a Connecticut elementary school. While concerned about limited land and higher costs for building materials could weigh on their bottom lines, the nation's home builders are upbeat in terms of their future sales outlook. That's according to the latest National Association of Home Builders, Wells Fargo Builder Sentiment Index. It was still down 2 points in April from the previous month. Readings below 50 suggest continued negative sentiment in the home building sector. Builders have been breaking ground on more homes with steady job creation and still record low mortgage rates, luring more people into the housing market. Stocks moved sharply lower today as big drops in commodity prices coupled with the twin explosions in Boston sharply rattled investors. The broad market also suffered its worst day in more than 4 months because of a big plunge in gold prices. Gold fell nearly 8% today. The Dow dropped 265 points to close at 14,599. The S&P 500 dropped 36 points. The Nasdaq closed down 78 points. This is NPR. A judge has ruled the last of the so-called Ohio Bridge bombing suspects is mentally competent to stand trial. The judge ruling that 23-year-old Joshua Stafford of Cleveland is able to assist in his defense, and he scheduled a Thursday hearing on trial arrangements. The judge made the ruling after hearing from psychologists who said Stafford suffers from depression and is suicidal. No bomb ever went off, and no one was injured in the alleged plot last year in which a highway bridge between Cleveland and Akron was supposedly targeted. Federal Aviation Administration is ordering special inspections of 737 jetliners. Airlines will be checking the Boeing aircraft for possible corrosion of pins used to attach movable tail panels. NPR's Wendy Kaufman has more.
The so-called Airworthiness Directive applies to more than 1,000 737s, including the newest version of the world's most popular jetliner. The order stems from reports of an incorrect procedure used to apply a coating to prevent wear and corrosion of the affected parts. The FAA says the problem could result in premature failure of the attachments. Problems with the horizontal stabilizer, the movable tail surfaces at issue here, could, in a worst-case scenario, put a plane into a steep dive or climb that pilots could not prevent. It should be noted, however, that the suspect parts have not caused any accidents. Airline schedules are not expected to be affected by the inspection order. Wendy Kaufman, NPR News.
Just in case you've somehow forgotten, today is the day to file your federal income tax returns or file for an extension. Meanwhile, the new study shows that from the group National Taxpayer Advocates shows some areas, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Houston, Atlanta, and Washington, D.C., have higher numbers of audit rates. I'm Jack Spear, NPR News in Washington.
Hello, Juno. You are listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. As you've heard in national news, explosions occurred near the finish line of today's Boston Marathon, killing two people and injuring many others. A third came later at the JFK Library, and other explosive devices have been found in the downtown Boston area. 40 Alaskans were in the Boston Marathon, including Dr. John Burcell from Juno. KTOO News has talked with Dr. Burcell, who finished the race before the bombs went off and was safe in his hotel room at the time of the blast. KTOO News will have an update later this afternoon. At 4:10, President Obama is scheduled to speak, and KTOO will be carrying that speech. Right now, in the studio, I am sitting with Kim Kiefer from CBJ, the City and Borough of Juno. She's the city manager. Hi, Kim.
Hello.
So I'll ask the question that probably everyone is thinking right now. In the worst case scenario, how is CBJ prepared to in case of an emergency?
So what we do is we have what we call tabletop exercises, and we do it on a fairly regular basis with a number of different agencies in town. We just happened to have one on Friday that included state agencies, the Coast Guard, the FBI, Juno Police Department, and we use different scenarios. So sometimes we use scenarios that involve bombs, sometimes we use scenarios that involve large fires, sometimes we use scenarios that involve avalanches. But what we try to do is what would we do and how would we handle something like this? Anytime you're planning a major event like a Boston Marathon, and so in Juno, it could have been the old days of ski to sea, where you have big events, you have road closures, you have a lot of emergency personnel around. You plan for different scenarios. Do you plan for a scenario like this? Not usually here, but you have those emergency plans in place. What do you do if this doesn't happen or this happens? So that's how we're preparing for it, and we will continue to prepare for it. With the many passengers that we get here in the summertime, it's really critical for us to have those emergency plans in place and to plan and work off of those. We had training that was provided in Anchorage a couple weeks ago for what we call the chief positions. It's a incident command system. So there's an incident command or unified command. Unified command is when you have a number of agencies working together. And then you have different people. And so there's a section for logistics, there's a section for planning, there's a section for operations, and there's a section for finance. And so the training in Anchorage a couple weeks ago were for those section chief positions on what do you need to do and how do you do it. The ICS program came out of 9/11, and where people came in to respond, other agencies came in to respond, and there wasn't a unified way to do it. So you didn't have same language, you didn't have same radio codes. So people were doing what they did, and they didn't know, and they couldn't track people because of that. And so we've learned a lot, unfortunately, from that hopefully the people in Boston are able to use, and those people that are coming in to assist them will be able to use, so that you have that one point of contact and everybody has a similar language.
Right. And as a citizen, if something of an emergency should take place in Juno, what is, from your point of view, what is the best thing to do as a citizen? Like, is it sit tight? Is it wait for news? Is it go help at shelters? What is the best advice as a citizen? Because I know that Juno is so community-minded, mm-hmm. that immediately people are going to want to help. Mm-hmm. You know, first you want to protect your loved. You know, you go into, I need to be safe. Mm-hmm. My family needs to be safe. Where is my family? Mm-hmm. But what's the best course of action for a citizen in an emergency like this?
And you know what? There's not one best course of action. So it really depends on what the situation is. If you think back to the Gastineau fire recently in Juneau, what we asked people to do is stay out of downtown. We knew the power was going to have to be cut off because of the fire. We were concerned about the fire potentially spreading. So we asked people to stay out of downtown and stay home and not add more people to the potential situation that was happening. Sometimes there's a need for Red Cross volunteers. So one thing people can do is talk to Red Cross, find out what the classes are that they offer right now, and they have some basic training that can happen for people depending upon how involved you want to get. So calling them, finding out what the options are. In major emergencies, and my guess is Boston may be dealing with this at this point, is having enough blood. That's a situation potentially that we would have in Juneau. Do we have enough blood here? And we would then need to get some from someplace else. So finding out, do we need donations of, does the hospital need donations of blood? So my recommendation is if there's an emergency, listen and we'll direct you on what best to do. Sometimes it's sitting tight. Sometimes here's where we need volunteers and here's the kind of volunteers we need to assist. So we will try to get that message out to people to let them know what the best thing for them to do. It's always important for people to be prepared themselves. Take this opportunity from this bad situation to have those discussions with your children, with your family. What happens if so-and-so doesn't come home? Where's that meeting place that everybody needs to go? Do you have enough water for the family if something happens with our water system? Do you have enough water for your pets? Do you have a backup radio that's battery operated? What are those emergency plans you have set in your house? So, like I said, my thoughts and prayers go out to the people in Boston and those people that are providing services to them. What we can learn from their crisis right now is how to have that discussion with our family members and make sure that we take the time to do that, because when something happens, it's always too late.
Right. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Juneau Afternoon on KTOO. In the studio is Kim Kiefer, the city manager. Today, there were explosions toward the end of the Boston Marathon. We're getting updates. President Obama will be speaking at 4:10, and we're just talking about emergency preparedness. And so Kim was just saying that there was a recent exercise with mm-hmm. multiple different agencies, and what I'm getting from you, Kim, is that there are quite a few emergency preparedness disaster-oriented agencies here in town. I'm sure you have the proper verbiage for me.
Well, there's a number of agencies that deal with this. So we've got state agencies. We have the Coast Guard. That's their job, is to deal with emergencies. And so we have a number of Coast Guard people here in town. We have state troopers in town. We have connections with state agencies that can also tap into resources in Anchorage or other places. So if we've got a major emergency, we would be looking towards most likely Anchorage to provide services for us. And we, in turn, provide services and we look to provide services for smaller communities. So if something happened in Gustavus or even in Sitka or Tenneke or other places, we would look to see how can we assist them, just as Anchorage is our lifeline potentially for assistance.
Right, but as a Southeast hub, we have federal and state and local agencies.
Correct. In town, right here.
Who are trained and ready to go mm-hmm. if the worst should happen, mm-hmm. if many scenarios, obviously.
And everybody has a responsibility of having different exercises that happen, and so people may remember airport exercises. Sometimes it's tabletop, and sometimes they actually ask for people to assist them, and so they have federal requirements that they have to go through sort of a dry run, where they actually put people out and they have tags on them that say, here's what's wrong with me, and then they have first responders that go and bring them off-site. And so that happens every couple of years, and that's a requirement of FAA for the airport. So all the agencies get together and talk about how to do it. Every year they talk about the tabletop, and then they have the real-life exercise. Coast Guard does that. We do that. There's a number of agencies that constantly are getting together to have those opportunities to discuss why it's calm time to be able to discuss.
Right. You use the term tabletop several times. What is that?
A tabletop is sort of a dry run. So you're in a big conference room, you have all the agencies, and they sit around the table and talk about, here's what we would bring to the table in a situation like this. Here's the resources we have, both people and equipment and supplies. And so it's not actually doing it, compared to times when we actually have tried to do simulated, like the exercise I talked about at the airport, where it's actually a simulation.
Right. So tabletop is discussing all the scenarios and the response, and then there's simulations. So it's actually an action. So they see how it works, and then they probably debrief and talk about how to make it better and
exactly.
So on and so forth.
And the other thing that's important is we debrief after those, and after we have any kind of major incident here, we also debrief. So after the Gaston fire, we got everybody together and we debriefed that. What could we have done better? What did we do well? What changes will we look at for the future? So we use every opportunity we can as a learning opportunity.
Okay, thank you. So Kim obviously was scheduled on the show before this horrible incident happened in Boston. Is there anything, I know that we really were focusing on this, is there anything that is really timely that we should talk about, or should we just reschedule and talk about what we were going to talk about originally?
Really what we're in the process right now is budget, but nothing seems really important after what's happening right now. So that process will be going forward. You can check the city website at juno.org to find out when meetings are coming up, and every Wednesday for the next 2 months, basically, are budget meetings.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Kim, for joining us in the studio today.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 15th of April, 2013. Today is tax day, the 15th day of April. The income tax, in effect in this country since Congress ratified the 16th Amendment back in 1913, back when the income tax form was only 2 pages long. Dave Barry said, "It's income tax time again. Americans, time to gather up those receipts. Get out those tax forms, sharpen up that pencil, and stab yourself in the aorta." It's the birthday of the humorist Morris Bishop, born in Willard, New York, in 1893. His father was a doctor, and he was born at the Willard State Hospital for the Insane, where his father worked and his grandfather had worked before him. Morris Bishop went off to Cornell, studied romance languages, became a full-time professor there, stayed there for the rest of his career. A brilliant scholar, fluent in German, Swedish, Latin, modern Greek, French, Spanish, wrote biographies of Pascal, Champlain, La Rochefoucauld, Petrarch, and St. Francis, but we know him as the author of Light Verse, the man who wrote, "I lately lost a preposition, it hid, I thought, beneath my chair, and angrily I cried, perdition, up from out of in under there. Correctness is my vadimacum, and straggling phrases I abhor, and yet I wondered, what should he come up from out of in under for?" It's the birthday of Henry James, author of 20 novels, 112 stories, 12 plays, and several books of travel and criticism. Born in New York City, 1843, father was a friend of Thoreau, Emerson, Hawthorne. Family traveled throughout Europe. When Henry James was in his 20s and writing short stories, he moved to Europe because he could live cheaply there, and he fell in love with England. He wrote, "The capital of the human race happens to be British." What he really wanted to be, though, was a dramatist. But one of his plays was poorly received, and James himself was booed on opening night, and that discouraged him. He never earned much money from his writing, nor did he win the acclaim that he had hoped for. His friend Edith Wharton lobbied for him to win the Nobel Prize, to no avail. And towards the end of his life, James got a generous advance from Scribner's for a new book, an advance that actually secretly came from Edith Wharton. Here's a poem for today by Patricia Farnioli, "The Undeniable Pressure of Existence." I saw the fox running by the side of the road, past the turned-away brick faces of the condominiums, past the Citgo gas station with its line of cars and trucks, and he ran limping, gaunt, matted, dull-haired, past Jim's Pizza, past the Washoe Mat, past the Thai Garden, his sides heaving like bellows, and he kept running to where the interstate crossed the state road, and he reached it, and he ran on under the underpass, and beyond it, past the perfect rows of split levels, their identical driveways, their brookless and forestless yards, and from my moving car I watched him, helpless to do anything to help him, certain he was beyond any aid, any desire to save him, and he ran loping on, far out of his element, sick, panting, starving, his eyes fixed on some point ahead of him, some possible salvation in all this hopelessness that only he could see. A poem by Patricia Farnioli, The Undeniable Pressure of Existence, from Duties of the Spirit, published by Tupelo Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Reputation.com, whose Reputation Defender Service is designed to help businesses and professionals improve their search results. Learn more at 1-800-REPUTATION. Produced by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
Hello, I'm Joan Pardis. You are listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. As many of you have heard, there's been an explosion near the finish line of today's Boston Marathon. At 4:10, President Obama will be speaking. It will be covered on this station. Please turn to KTOO on your radio and on the web for updates about what's going on in Boston. Here in Juneau, the weather is starting to turn cloudy, and there's rain likely tomorrow with a chance of snow, and then rain and snow for the rest of the week. I talked about this earlier. Dr. John Barcell was a runner in the Boston Marathon. He is fine. He's in his hotel room. The KTOO news staff did speak with him. And as I said, there'll be updates at the end of this show. Please feel free to turn to the website for breaking news on that. Here in the studio, I have Becca Parks from the Juneau Economic Development Council here to talk about STEM summer camps, STEM being science, technology, engineering, and math.
Yep.
Hi, Becca.
Hi.
So let's talk about what's going on in Juneau this summer.
Okay. It's a happier topic, but I'd just like to say, too, it's nice to hear K2 covering things happening in Boston and have Kim come on and talk about emergency responsiveness in Juneau. It's something, watching Facebook and other social media, the country is watching Boston today. It's all very sad.
Extremely sad. Thanks for sharing that. So I guess the world keeps on turning, so we'll talk about the science camps. So what kind of engineers and mathematicians are we going to make here in Juneau to maybe help save our planet?
Yeah. Well, I will say we have some really great offerings this summer. I think it's our best lineup yet for summer camps. And we had talked about for science, technology, engineering, and math going through older to younger. And one of the things I'd like to stress for parents listening that are looking for opportunities for their kids is that all these camps are connected to opportunities that your kids will get to go back to school and say, oh, this is why I'm studying what I am in geometry. It'll help me with a flight plan, or my algebra class is really going to help me figure out how to develop the right kind of app for the game that I want to see out there, or the function that I need something on my phone to serve. So these camps are really enhancing all that stuff that your kids are going back to school and doing and looking to go into later in life.
Right. So it sounds like it has everyday applications. It might make school a little bit more accessible as far as in the bigger picture.
Exactly.
And it's also tied to the Alaska Course Standards.
It is. They all are. And so we'll start with two for our older kids. We have two options that are open to high schoolers. The first one, grades 7 through 12, is actually my pick for summer camp. It's an app camp, and it's led by one one of our community mentors and coordinated with my coworker, Bob Veith. But kids are going to be able to come in and learn how to develop their own app for their smartphone. And that's June 17th to 21st, again, grades 7 through 12. And I just think for anyone that is getting used to using all those apps and you constantly find yourself looking at your phone wanting something specialized for exactly what you're doing that day, why not send your kid to camp to figure out how to create that for you?
That sounds great. Before we go any further, let's talk about some contact info. So if you want to learn about camps, where can they find you as far as the details?
STEMAK.org. There's a link to all our summer programs right on the front page there, and it has our contact info. You can also email me directly. It's rparks@jedc.org, or call our office lines 523-2334, or our main line, which is 523-2300.
And as far as all of these camps, they're day camps, is that correct?
Yes, these are all day camps.
Okay, and they're 1 week in length, every one of them?
They change. So some of them are 3 days, and most of them are about 5 days in length.
Okay. So you've got your Build Your Own App camp.
Yep. There is also a Build Your Own Skateboard camp. And that one we're doing gender specifics. So there's a girls-only option, July 22nd to 26th. And it's doing material science. You're learning about composites. And every kid will actually get to go home with their own homemade skateboard. And then the boys have their option July 29th to August 2nd. So that actually, it works out well. That's kind of my second pick for camps this summer.
And that's for secondary, too. That's 7 through 12?
It's 7 through 10.
Okay.
Yeah. So slightly smaller age range. Working down for grades 7 to 9, we have a Learn to Fly ground school. And that's any kid that grows up around Alaska, you know, folks that have planes. We see the float planes going every summer. I saw the ducks just went in down at the wharf. So you can learn to fly on the ground, and that's June 10th to 14th for grades 7 to 9. We also have a geocaching and GPS. It's one of those quick and dirty 3 days, but we're going to have some partnering with Fish and Wildlife and Fish and Game to be out there, learn how whales are tracked and bears are tracked using GPS, and do some basic orienteering also. And that'll be grades 6 through 8, and it'll be a mix of indoor and outdoor activities for kids that want to get a little more hiking in with their summer science camp. With that, we also have our Sun to Sea camp that we've been offering. I think this will be our fourth or fifth year partnering with NOAA to offer that. And that's July 8th through 12th for grades 7 and 8. And that one, they get to do some fishing and learning about a lot of the research that's done at NOAA Fisheries. Again, we have our first LEGO League programming for beginner and advanced. And that is for ages 9 to 14. It's usually grades 4 through 8. For kids that are looking to be on that LEGO League robotics team, the beginner classes are in the morning, and you don't have to have any experience at all. The advanced classes in the afternoon, I highly recommend for kids that are looking to take their programming that next step. Our instructor is Paul Keeney. He's a LEGO expert from Minnesota who is a certified LEGO educator, and he's actually been for the geekier kids out there that have been following LEGO education and the products, the EV3 that's coming out. He's been beta testing EV3s, and he'll be bringing one of those up before they're actually released for us to play around with this summer. More reason to sign up for the advanced camp this year. And then our final one in Juneau is the Kitchen Chemistry Camp. It's becoming a classic. It's our third year for the younger kids, grades 4 through 6. And you go out. I know last year I was with them. They made their own cheeses, did some pickling. They got to, I think they blew up a hot dog and made some fudge and some caramels. So that one's a lot of fun. And that's a good one for parents to come out and help at also. And it can become a real family event.
Okay. So if you're just joining us, we are covering what's going on in Boston. Check on the web, and at 4:10, President Obama will be speaking about the latest. Well, he'll be speaking, and we'll also be going to NPR for the latest news from Boston. Here in the studio, I'm talking to Juneau Economic Development Council's Becca Parks, who is the STEM coordinator, the Science, Technology, Engineering, Math coordinator, about their camps. So, Becca, I know you want to talk about a few more things, but I have to ask you a question. These camps sound absolutely fantastic, and obviously there are partnerships of local talent and national talent. Where's the funding source for this? I would imagine it's a variety of different things, but these sounds the camps just sound terrific.
And they are. And we're able to offer them for very low cost and scholarships for kids that can't afford. We have financial aid. All that information is available on our website. Our funding has come from a mix of sources. We've gotten some support from the state of Alaska. Our original funding actually came from federal sources through the Department of Defense. We get corporate support from BP, and then some smaller donors around town, and some support that goes to the Juneau Economic Development Council from CBJ.
Wow. Yeah, yes, I just was like, wow, how can we pay for this? We're so lucky to have this here in Juneau. So thanks for explaining that to me.
We are, and we're, you know, still encouraging. I know that the budgets just came out from the Capitol, but the more support that our state can continue to contribute to this kind of education, the more you come out and see these camps and you see what's going on in a lot of our schools, you understand how important it is to put that extra money in to make sure that those opportunities are there for our kids so that the talent is there to continue what's been going on in our state and the good work that folks are doing.
Right. So I'll say what I heard Becca say is that if your child has participated in one of these camps, you should let legislators and the governor know. And if you think that this programming is valuable, you should share those thoughts with the people that have the purse strings for the state. She didn't say that. I said that. So let's talk about what's coming. Well, before we even move away from this, you talked about the Robotic League. Is that a school-based? It's not a school-based, but a school-timed activity. Is it?
It's actually a mix. It's one of the things I love about First LEGO League is that anybody can participate. So we've had every single school has participated and has the equipment to participate. The Girl Scouts in town have participated. I know 4-H is looking at starting a robotics club. We've had homeschool participating, and I know Raven is planning on having at least one First LEGO League team. So it's really anybody that wants to get involved can do that either through their school or just a group of friends at home.
Okay. All right. And is there a league at, like, is it a club that people go to, that kids go to, or is it through all those things that you were
just
talking about?
It's through all those things, okay. And everybody runs practices on their own, so it works like a soccer practice where the coach kind of says, let's meet on Wednesdays after school for 90 minutes, and that's how it works out.
Okay. So what if you're an adult and you're interested in this? What would you do?
Well, for the longest time, you couldn't do anything, but we started the corporate challenge to give adults the chance to play along, try out what the kids are doing, and get to have fun the way that they do. So we're doing the corporate challenge again this year, and we are in the process of signing teams up and giving out kits. That money for the corporate teams or the groups of adults that sign up helps to support the teams and the league here in Juneau and our local tournament. Last year we had 6 teams sign up, and it was a lot of fun. They get from now until the event to get together and practice and try to put together what the kids do in the fall. Last year our adults actually beat the high score that kids had gotten in Alaska in the fall. That's the first time that that's happened, so we'll see if the adults can pull it out again this year. But again, they get to sign up. We give you all of the supplies that you need. I can even give you a quick tutorial on the programming language that the kids use. That's the Mindstorms NXTG. And then you get to take it home, and you have practice, just like the kids do.
Right. And if you're new to First LEGO League or robotics, teams, whether they're kids or adults, they build robots, and they have very specific directions that they have to do. And you could just put robotics in a search engine, and you'll get more information than you would possibly want. But for the adult challenge, it is Friday, May 24th at the Baranoff Hotel from 6 to 8. It's put on by JEDC, and BP is a sponsor. And it's $200 per team. That money goes back into the STEM programming at JEDC. Mm-hmm. And to find out more, you could probably go to akstem.org.
STEMAK.org. It's also on FLLAlaska.com. The link to register is right on that homepage. And again, you don't have to be a corporation. This is anybody that wants to get involved. It's a great way to play around with the programming. Just have fun. We call it a competition, but really you can show up with anything on May 24th and you're going to have a good time. And then even if you're not on a team, to be a spectator on May 24th, it is totally free of charge. It's at the Baranoff. It's a family-friendly event. We do ask that anyone under 21 does show up with a parent or guardian, as there's a no-host bar for folks that want to indulge in that.
Right. Okay. Well, Becca, thank you so much for what you do and for joining us today.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. We're in West Africa, northern Ghana, at Mole National Wildlife Reserve. The heat is intense. We've hiked down a steep embankment to a broad floodplain, me with my binoculars, and Zachariah Ware, a park ranger, with his rifle. Soon we're pushing through a field of chest-high peppermint. Birds spring up around us like grasshoppers. We look for a clearing where we can cross a shallow stream. Then, through low trees, I hear an unmistakable sound. Zach, there's an elephant nearby. Yes, Mom, I know. Don't be afraid. I know that one. It's a good one. My heart is pounding as we move downstream. A blue-breasted kingfisher calls, yet my attention is drawn to a large hole at the base of a dead tree. What lives there? I ask. An aardvark, Mum. Nothing to worry about. You wait here. I'm going around the bend in the stream. Watch the sky. You're going to see something you will never forget. Zach disappears, and I'm on high alert. Suddenly, an exquisite rainbow of carmine, copper, cerulean, and green rises into the air, as flight after flight of red-throated bee-eaters emerge from burrows in a sandbank and take to the sky. Special thanks to drummer Alwala Hassan. I'm Mary McCann, inviting you to share your birding adventures at birdnote.org.
The School of Management at the University of Alaska Southeast is open for business with courses in accounting, information systems, business, and public administration. Learn online, engage with faculty experts, and change your career path. You can check out the fall course offerings at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Southeast.
Juno Afternoon. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. I'm Joan Pardis. KTOO and NPR are covering the Boston Marathon bombings. President Obama will be speaking at 4:10, and we will be covering that here from KTOO. On the local front, Andy Klein has lost his dog, a female yellow lab mix named Scout. She was wearing a bright red collar, and she went missing near the Baranoff Hotel around 10:30 or 11 this morning. Her name and number are on the collar. If you find her, please call that number, because we've got a very concerned citizen who's lost their dog. In the studio, I have Ginger Blaisdell and Judy Morley of the Capital City Quilters Guild. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
So you have an upcoming event coming up at Centennial Hall. But before we talk a little bit about, before we get to the actual event, I'd like to hear a little bit about the Capital City Quilters Guild. How many, I'm going to ask Ginger, how many people are in the Guild?
Right now we have about between 80 and 90 members. We've ranged anywhere from 200 members to about 80 or so that we have right now. And the quilters range everything from, actually there's a few young girls and women into their 70s and 80s. So it's quite a range.
And to be a member of the Guild, do you meet monthly? Do you meet quarterly? Do you meet on a regular basis? Do you sew together? Do you quilt separately? How does it all work?
All of the above.
Okay.
So we meet once a month. We meet on
Third Tuesday of each month.
Right now we meet at the Thunder Mountain High School library. And we do have a lot of fun events as well. We have social events that involve fabric or sewing. We have retreats. We do classes where we'll bring national instructors in and work with us on all different kinds of skills.
Okay. And if people are interested in becoming part of the Guild, how would they do that?
The best way is to come to our event this weekend. And we do have a lot of information about the Guild and joining. And some people join because they're active quilters. Some want to learn about it. And some just like the inspiration.
Okay. So beginners are welcome.
Absolutely.
Okay. So the biannual quilting event is this weekend at Centennial Hall. What can people expect?
Well, they can expect to see about 100 quilts.
Wow.
And they can also expect to see quilts and handiwork done by children. We have one section that's open to those under the age of 18 who are who have been sewing. I'm not sure what's been entered yet because I haven't seen those, but I know there will be table runners, and there will be quilts, and there will be maybe pajama bottoms or pajama tops that they've made.
Wow, that sounds great.
There will also be a an auction table, which is how we pay for Centennial Hall. The public is welcome to this event free. There's no admission charge, but if you'd like to join in the silent auction, that is an opportunity. There will be, as Ginger said, there's going to be a table out front where you can fill out an application to or a membership form and join the guild right there if you'd like to. Our dues is $35 a year. We do have a national instructor coming in next year. It isn't official yet that she's accepted, so I can't say what her name is, but she will be coming.
Mm-hmm. So this quilting event, so it's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. What are the hours at Centennial Hall?
We're going to be opening at noon on Friday, and it'll be open until 5. At that time, the doors will close, and our panel of judges will come in and That's Saturday night. The panel of judges will come in. On Saturday and Sunday, the doors open at 10 and close at 6.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also voting by the public for your favorite quilt in the quilt show. So that's important for people to come in and take a little card and say, okay, this is the one I like.
Oh, wow. And then the judges will come in on Saturday night, and they'll make the final decision. So if you go on Sunday, you'll know who the winners are.
Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Okay, that sounds great.
On Friday and Saturday, you can choose the winners.
Right.
But on Sunday, you can see who everybody else chose.
That's great. That's great. And how many judges do you have?
I believe there are 3 main judges.
Mm-hmm.
The entire guild also votes.
Oh, wow.
And then the judges pick from what the guild has picked the top, the first place winners and that kind of thing.
Okay.
Or the best in
Best in show.
And judge's choice, mm-hmm. and all those.
Sounds great. And then the silent auction has quilts, I would imagine.
It has quilts and quilt-related items. Do you know?
Pin cushions,
yes. Mm-hmm. We have a pin cushion challenge.
Wow.
I think the only restriction on the pin cushion challenge is it really had to hold pins.
I can imagine there's going to be a lot of creative pin cushions.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Judy, her daughter is in a Girl Scout troop with my daughter, and I think we might have to be making pin cushions ourselves. So there we go. But, okay, so here we are. We have Capital City Quilters Guild this weekend at Centennial Hall. It's free. Come and see the creative, amazing array of quilts and other things that are being made. And if you want to be part of the process as far as judging, you could put your 2 cents in. Mm-hmm. Judy, it seems like you have something to say.
I was going to ask Ginger, do you know anything about the education that's going to be going on at the show, mm-hmm. as far as that goes? Can you explain
other classes?
Right. We have one quilter who's going to be setting up a station where the public can come and make a square.
Oh, wow.
And at the end of the quilt show, she'll take all of the squares that are made by the public or members of the guild and put it together as a charity quilt. And she makes probably 30 or 40 charity quilts a year, and they go everywhere from the Aware Shelter to just needy people. If we have events, like when the Gastineau apartments burn, she made a number of quilts to be donated to that. And so one of our charity quilts this year is going to be coming from the event this weekend.
That sounds terrific. And she's going to be there all 3 days. This station will be operating all 3 days. Well, that sounds great. Well, ladies, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you, and hopefully we'll see you there.
I plan to.
Thank you.
Thanks.
my grandma's patchwork quilt, squares of corduroy and silk, red and green and blue and yellow too, on my grandma's patchwork quilt. Just a patchwork quilt so fine, it was an art of her design. A piece of sister's dress next to grandpa's vest, on my grandma's patchwork quilt. On my grandma's patchwork quilt, squares of corduroy and silk, red and green and blue and yellow too, on my grandma's patchwork quilt. Got a pillow for my head, and it wants to be my friend, but nothing keeps me warm in a thunderstorm like my grandma's patchwork quilt. Ah, oh, my grandma's patchwork quilt, squares of corduroy and silk, red and green and blue and yellow too, on my grandma's patchwork quilt. Now my grandma's gone to rest, and her quilt is all that's left, but her love, I swear, is in every square, on my grandma's patchwork quilt. On my grandma's patchwork quilt, squares of corduroy and silk, red and green and blue and yellow too, on my grandma's patchwork quilt. Around the world the people wait for a day when there's no hate, and we treat each one like my grandma done with her crazy patchwork quilt. Ah, my grandma's patchwork quilt, squares of corduroy and silk, red and green and blue and yellow too, on my grandma's patchwork quilt.
Support comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, offering fresh roasted coffees since 1974 and proud supporters of public radio since 1987. Heritage Coffee, committed to community. Information online on Facebook or heritagecoffee.com.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. As many of you have heard in national news, explosions occurred near the finish line of today's Boston Marathon, killing two people and injuring many others. President Obama is scheduled to speak at 4:10. KTOO will be airing that speech. As of now, we're going to go to George Kuhar's Mudrooms essay, and the topic was near-death experience. This Mudrooms was part of the April event, and if you'd like to listen to the entire Mudroom event, Mudroom is a storytelling event that takes place once a month. People go up and talk for 7 minutes about a specific topic. The entire most recent Mudrooms will air at the last Monday of this month at 7 p.m., but right now we'll go to George Kuhar's near-death experience essay that was part of Mudrooms in April.
So, this next guy... he is a musician, multimedia artist, and magician. He enjoys lucid dreaming, astral projection, tarot reading, occult studies, and walks in the woods. He aspires to someday be famous for no good reason whatsoever. As a child, he once ate a live scorpion. Some things in life, he says, are just meant to sting. And his name is George Kuhar.
Hello. Okay, so I've always been really curious about life and death and that whole process, and fortunately for me, I was given the opportunity to find out a lot, get really close to death. I was born with a hereditary kidney condition, and that meant that sometime in my late 20s, I was going to have kidney failure. And not only that, dying by kidney failure is not something that sneaks up on you. Your body stops processing fluids, and you start to fill up with water. You see it in your ankles first, and then it gets up to your knees, and then to your waist. And I've waited until the water was up to my heart before I went into the emergency room. My arm around my wife's shoulder. And a healthy person, they measure your kidney health with your creatinine number, and a healthy person's number is 0.6, 0.7 or so. I walked into the ER that day, and my creatinine level was 18, almost 20 times what it's supposed to be. And my doctor, Dr. McPherson, he was really cool. And he's a little Scottish guy. He's very, very nice. And somebody knows him. George, we got to send you to Anchorage. We got to put you on a plane. We got to send you to Anchorage. We need a stool sample first. Give me a cup of coffee. I'll bring it. You know. No, we don't have time. And he puts his glove on. And okay. So they get me on the Learjet. I'm on my first ever private Learjet experience. And I'm lying down in the bed, and they got you all wrapped up good, and they have needles and hoses coming in me, and I'm right next to the window. It's right there. And then I'm lying there, and I feel this warm rush come over me. And I think, oh, that's weird. And I said, what was that? And the in-flight nurse says, oh, well, we just gave you some morphine for the pain. I said, oh, okay. And I looked out the window, and the sun was rising over the Chilcats, and I started to sing to myself. And I think it's gonna be a long, long time. Touchdown brings me round again to find I'm not the man they think I am at home. I'm the Rocket Man. Rocket Man. They sent me to Anchorage. They got me all fixed up. I went on dialysis treatments, and I started feeling better. The interesting thing was that not too long after that, I had a vision. And if any of you have had a vision, you know that a vision is not like a dream. A vision is not like an hallucination. A vision is something very unique unto itself. And the main difference is a vision has a vibration. And that vibration changes you instantly. And so in this vision, I met a man named Joseph. And he wanted to show me something. And he led me down some dark stairs. And we went down into this underground place. And we walked around down there. And I was walking behind him. And he turned. And he went out the exit. And the exit was dark. And I stopped. And I looked. And then in my peripheral, I noticed someone was flashing a light in a figure eight. And I looked at it, and then it stopped right on me. And as I set my gaze upon it, it just exploded into this humongous light. And it was just huge, and it took up the entire room. And it moved in a way that I cannot explain. The best I can say is that it was like diamonds. It was like liquid diamonds in a sea of white burning fire. And it roared. It roared very loud. It roared like 1,000 waterfalls, like being on the inside of a vacuum cleaner. It was so, so, so loud. And it grabbed me. And it held me. And I sat there, and it vibrated me, and it shook me to the deepest core that I didn't even know that I had. And I said, thank you, God. And when that happened, I sat up in bed, and that vibration was still with me, and I could feel it, and it stayed with me, and it stayed with me. And then sometime after that, I went to the Twilight Cafe, which is the old house of the longtime Juno resident, Joe Sonman. And the connection that I have to that house is that's the house that I first lived in when I came to Juno. And I went in there, and I had a cup of coffee, and I looked around, and I thought, well, it's very different in here than when I lived here. And Joe Sonman had since passed on. After I left the Twilight Cafe, I was filled with this urge. And I got a pen and paper, and I started to write. And I'm certain that it was Cho Sonmin saying something. And this is what he said. When I was alive, alive with my pride and with my stride, that I could never, ever, ever hide, I became sick at the end of my wick. And God knows I won't come back so quick. So when I died, it split me far and wide, a moonless night and an empty tide. And now that I am dead, alone in my bed, you bake my life into your bread. And I will always be there, right by your side. And you will always be here, right by mine. Everybody, did you know that every day you have about 50 million cells die? Life is a near-death experience. And we are in debt to death. And I just love that. Have a good night.
That was George Cuhar's Mudrooms essay about his near-death experience. For the full Mudrooms lineup, you could listen on Monday, the last Monday of this month at 7 p.m. As many of you know, in Boston today, there was an explosion that occurred near the finish line of today's marathon, killing two people and injuring many others. Right after Juno Afternoon, we'll be going to All Things Considered. President Obama will be speaking at 4:10. 40 Alaskans were in the Boston Marathon, including Dr. John Brussell, who is safe. He finished the race by the time of the explosion, and KTOO News staff spoke with him in his hotel. So we will please feel free to turn to KTOO, both on the web and on the radio, for updates about what's going on in Boston on this very, very sad day. Tomorrow on Juno Afternoon, Pat Moore will host, and he'll be talking to Vaughn Sherman about his new book, Sea Travels. Orca will be talking about their summer programs. We'll find out about open houses for kindergarten students that will be taking place this month. And, of course, Writers' Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more. But today, we're all very interested in the news. A little local news is that Andy Klein has lost his female yellow lab mix named Scout. She went missing near the Baranoff Hotel this morning. She does have a collar, and there's a name and number on that. So if you run into Scout, a female yellow lab mix, please give Andy a shout. The information's on the collar, so Andy and Scout can be reunited. So thank you for listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. The weather is partly cloudy. It's clouding up after a glorious weekend here in Juneau. There's a chance of rain in the morning, then rain in the afternoon. The snow level's been lifted to 800 feet. Earlier today I said it was snow and rain in the morning, and that doesn't seem to be the case anymore. Tuesday night will be rain and snow. Snow accumulation up to 1 inch. Lows around 36. Southeast winds 5 to 15 miles per hour. Wednesday, there'll be rain diminishing in the afternoon, and the wind will pick up to 10 to 20 miles an hour. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy. Thursday, cloudy. Thursday night, rain. So thank you for listening. Our hearts and thoughts are with the people in Boston. And turn to KTOO for updates.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ock Bay area, tune to K276 AF 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Huna at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. KRNN can be heard on digital channel 872, and KXLL can be found at 873. We're also online at ktoo.org.
People were just running as fast as they can, even though they just ran a marathon. They were still took off running. Everybody was just scattering.
A pair of explosions trigger panic at the Boston Marathon.
It's Monday, April 15th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.